The media landscape in America is busted. Americans are on to the omissions, the half-truths, and the outright lies being propagated against we, the people. Your host, Tom Harris, will bring you the other side of the story.
I have the pleasure of announcing that as of this episode of The Other Side of the Story, I have a new co-host who will be on air with me for most programs. It's Todd Royal, who's no stranger to the program, having been my guest on the show about a half a dozen times. On hearing those episodes, both my wife and the lady who does the editing of the show audio, she said, "You got to get this guy on as a co-host." So we did. Todd is an internationally published columnist, energy policy expert, and author based in McKinney, Texas. He has advised the U.S. Departments of Energy and Commerce, the U.S. Congress, and the states of Kentucky, California, and Texas. So welcome to your first co-hosting, Todd.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom, for having me. And thank you for our two guests. I'm looking forward to I'm greatly looking forward to hearing what they have to say.
Yeah, it'll be fun. In today's episode, Todd and I will be speaking with two people who've had their drinking water aquifers contaminated as a result of the construction and operation of industrial wind turbines near their homes. Our first guest is Christine Burke from the former township of Dover in the municipality of Chatham-Kent in Ontario. Christine and her husband, Terry, used to get clean water from the well on their property. In fact, generations of the Burkes did so. Her father, who lived to 99 years of age, was born and raised in the same century home that Christine lives in now, drinking clean well water that they used to have. But now their water is contaminated by sediments that started showing up about 8 or 9 years ago. At first, they were under the impression that maybe it was something around the house that needed fixing. But they had no idea that other families around them were impacted in the same way. We'll learn today what the real cause was. Our second guest is Chaz, or Charles, officially, but we'll call him Chaz. That's his nickname. Chaz Thomas, who also had serious water issues after turbines were built up in his area. Chaz has lived with his wife in their home in central Illinois for 41 years. Having moved to the country from a very small rural community not far away so as to raise their children in a rural setting. And as I say, he now has serious water issues as well after industrial wind turbines came into his area. So thanks for being guests on our program, Chaz and Christine.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for giving us a chance.
Yeah, well, we get a good audience of about 50,000 people. And you'll get a podcast as well on Monday that you can send around to anyone you want. So it's important other people know what happens when these turbines go up. So over to you, Todd.
Well, thank you guys again so much. And so I really want to just dive into this with you, Christine. I really want to start with you and just hear your story and go, what was your well water like before the wind turbines were installed near your home? And then how long has it been like this?
First off, I'd need to correct Tom there. It'd be my kid's great grandfather that lived to be 99. My father-in-law was born and raised in this house. And since the house was built in 1920, we've had, as far as I know, this, as long as I've been here, the 40 years, it's been pristine, crystal clear, mineral filled. I mean, we had an infinite amount of water. I could fill up a pool outside easily and bring out the slip and slide, and today I can no longer do that.
When did you begin to notice the changes in your well water?
2009, the first 5 turbines were installed. It was the Borlax wind facility. That's when I first noticed it, because our laundry there appeared to be like a black sludge, a black oil that was forming on our clothes. And we ended up throwing a lot of clothes to the garbage. Then my washing machine broke down. My dishwasher broke down. I didn't know what was going on. And then when in 2013, the 55 turbines were started construction, we started noticing a black powder, and it just got thicker and thicker and thicker. And today it's black.
Yeah, I have a sample actually of your well water that you gave me when you visited Ottawa. And I'll put it up on the podcast as well, under the podcast when it goes up on Monday, so people can see. And, you know, there's two pictures. One shows it after it's settled, and the other shows when it's all suspended. And I take it the water stays, the sediment stays suspended. It doesn't settle in your system.
It's continuous. It won't go away. We can't filter it. It's black.
When you turn on your tap, it comes out black.
Well, no, not, you don't see it, but if you set it in a white ice cream pail or a white pail or a bucket and you let it sit for a while and then you dump the water out, you will see the black on the bottom. It is so, so fine.
Wow.
Oh, gosh. Tom, then please, you have some questions. This is awful hearing this. Are you able to use, is there any sort of filtration systems you can use now to make your water usable or potable?
No, we have four sediment traps that are washable, but you look at them, they're black in color. You can wash them all you want, bleach them all you want. You're still going to get that gray tone to it. And then after it goes through the first four sediment traps, it goes into six more filters. It's a 10 micron, 5 micron, 1 micron, and then 3.5 micron filters, cartridge filters. It is so, so fine, silt fine, that there's just no way to filter it out. We have to order the 0.5s out of Toronto. And that's the tightest that we can find. If we went, for example, if I were to get my hands on 0.1s or something like that, then is my water going to be restricted and we have no water? It's quite a challenge.
That must cost a lot of money buying all these filtration systems.
I've got to order another box.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So what do you guess you've put in so far in financial investment to try and filter the water?
Oh, it's been thousands. We've invested thousands of dollars into this turmoil. And I'm not alone. I need to stress that. There's a lot of families that are trying to deal with this.
Goodness. Charles, I'd love to ask you really kind of some of the same questions. What was your well water like before the wind turbines were installed near your home?
Well, we purchased this home in 1983, and the prior family had lived here since 1875. They built the home we live in now in 1953 and dug two wells in 1965. When we first moved here, we were using those wells, but they weren't sanitary. So we bored a new well in 1992 to a depth of 60 feet. And I still have the first drawing from that well. And it was crystal clear to begin with. And it stayed that way for years until the fall of 2018, when we first noticed it start to cloud up. We first noticed that turbidity in the autumn of 2018, and we didn't realize until later that was about the time they began their test bores to fulfill the investigations for their application of the wind farm. Mm-hmm. And we were alerted to the test bores by a neighbor who said that the boring and hammering had disturbed their horses. And then we realized that about the same time was when we first noticed that turbidity in the sediments in our water, it was turning our bath water gray and our toilet water gray, but it went away. I had a single house filter, and we changed that, but we had to change it a couple of times within a two-week period, and then it went away. So we didn't really know what it was. We just assumed that it was the test board. Later on, in the autumn of about 2019, after they had gotten their permit and they began to dig the foundations for the wind turbines, the turbidity came back and it has not gone away.
Oh, wow.
Gosh.
So even when the construction stopped with the turbines operating, it actually continued to, well, pollute your water. That's basically what you're saying.
It is. We still get sediment in it, but we have two larger filters. We contacted the Illinois State Water Survey as soon as this began out of the University of Illinois, because they are the ones that they really keep track of the wells and the well water in the area. And they suggested we raise the pump up from the bottom of the well. We have a submersible pump 5 feet, see if that didn't help. Well, we did that, and it didn't help. They offered some other reasons for the possible turbidity as heavy rains at that time of the year, but they never did come out to test our water. We sent water samples to an out-of-state testing facility, and they are a company that tests well waters for people that want to sell their homes. And they said we had dissolved solids that were above the EPA levels. And again, the University of Illinois said that that could be a fluctuation and not necessarily a continuous thing. But again, they never came out to test our water. So we removed the single house filter, installed two larger filters, and that helped a little bit. We have to change the filters quite often to keep the water clean. And we also installed a UV filter to kill any remaining bacteria. We never could, even with charcoal filters, we couldn't get the odor out of the well water. We never had that before. So ultimately, we ended up connecting to county water supply. And we used now we use the well waters just for the outside spigots. Mm-hmm. And the house is on county.
Yeah. Water. It's unbelievable hearing this. Christine, I'll come back, with you, Charles, but I also want to ask, did you have any idea of what was to come when this turbine construction project was announced?
No, we had no idea that this was going to happen. Even the people, the farmers that got themselves involved in purchasing or getting involved with the turbines, they had no idea that this was going to happen, because some of them wish that they would have never gotten involved knowing that this is going to happen, that this did happen now.
So that would probably assume then, like you, your neighbors, you said other farmers, it's not like anyone tried to stop the project. Is that correct?
Well, we're stepping back in time now. We got to remember that these are a lot of older rural folks that were on these old farmland that we still depended on mailboxes, and that information just wasn't supplied. Had we had the knowledge in that, then maybe we could have had an opportunity, but no, they were out before we even knew it.
Oh, jeez. And what do you think of the health impact, or do you have any idea what the health impact is if you were to drink that water? Because I take it, if I were you, I wouldn't drink it.
No.
So two questions. One is, do you drink it? And second is, how do you use it, if at all? And where do you get your water if you're not using it?
Oh, that's a very loaded question. to start with, no, we don't drink it. I dare anybody to drink it, and that's my worst fears is this is where we're at today. We're kind of jumping up pretty much to the last of it, that bear with me, please. No, we're not drinking it. We are forced to bathe with it. We are forced to launder with it. We don't have a choice. I don't cook with it. I buy the 1 gallon jugs of water at Walmart, for example, and I refill them. I have to go to town to refill them. We aren't fortunate enough to have a water line go by.
Chess, can I ask you some of the same questions? Just, did you have any idea what was to come when this turbine construction project was announced?
We weren't aware of it until one of our neighbors who lives over where the first properties were being leased let us know about it. And we didn't really know what to expect. There are turbines within a 30-mile radius of us, but they are much smaller.
Okay.
And we didn't know about the process or what might have done. We began to speak with others that had gone through the process, and our county wind ordinance had been written 10 years earlier, and it was written for much smaller turbines.
Mm-hmm.
So the townships that were going to be affected signed a petition, presented and requested a moratorium from the county. That was denied. So we took our case to the courts, and the court denied the moratorium. So the two townships affected established their own zoning committees and zoning ordinances, because Douglas County, where I live, Douglas County, Illinois, is not a zoned county. And once we did that, we set our restrictions a little bit, well, stronger than what the county had had. And the state of Illinois passed a law that went through the Capitol faster than a legislative pay raise, that took the zoning rights away from townships and gave them back to the counties. So we lost out on that too, and had to abide by whatever the county decided. And they went ahead and granted the application without listening to the residents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back to Christine. So why do you think it was the turbines that caused the degradation in your well water? Like, what was your indication of that, do you think? And what do you think are the mechanisms that are causing the pollution?
Well, it's no coincidence that so many families were impacted in this small area at the same time that the wind turbines were being constructed. And to add to that, the families that were impacted here in the township of Dover, we warned the municipality and we warned the Ministry of Environment on June 28th of 2017 that if they proceeded with the North Kent 1 facility in our neighboring Chatham Township, that more families were going to go through the same demise, and it was going to happen to them if they continued with that project. And it did. And it happened to them just as we warned it would. It happened to them. And yeah. you can't imagine what it was like for me to go over there on civil disobedience protest and sit with these families and wait and watch them lose their water. Some of them have, their sediments have been totally, totally plugged off their intake. It's unimaginable. Wow.
So what turbines do you have near your home? Like, where do you have them placed?
They're all around me. Directly to the west is Lake St. Clair. So I am 1 mile off the shoreline of Lake St. Clair. But northwest, southwest, and wrapping right around me is 94 turbines.
Wow. 94 turbines.
God.
God.
How close together are these turbines?
Too close. I can, if I step out my door, and my property, our property has got a bunch of trees that we planted years ago. These things top the trees, and I can see through my trees and above my trees. I can, if I'm standing in one spot in the back, there is 3, 4, 5 directly, like within that mile.
Oh my God. See, most new turbines now, it's being said they need to be over a mile apart. So for you to get the best, what's called a capacity factor, to make it, meaning it's going to run better, it's going to produce more energy, they're literally supposed to be spaced a mile apart. 94 of these, and you've got five totally. Right there.
Yeah, Borlex has 5. East Lake St. Clair has 55. And the North Kent 1 facility has 34. So that and what the question too was, what do you think caused this?
Yeah.
They pile driving, hammered 100-foot H beams, 25 per turbine, 25-ish per turbine. Oh. They hammered them into our shallow aquifer. Our aquifer is only 65 to 75 feet down. It's shallow, very delicate. And they hammered these H-beams into it, 25 per turbine. Now, if that doesn't do damage to our aquifer, I don't know what did. I mean,
So just so people know the depths. So the aquifer is below black shale, is that right? And then the turbine construction involved breaking the black shale into the aquifer. Is that the circumstance?
Our aquifer it's backwards. The aquifer sits on the black shale.
Oh, I see.
So it had been, of course, hammered, damaged, which puts the sediments into the flow of the water. And now you have the vibrations that continue to move that silt-like sediment, black shale sediment. It's never going to settle, like rest. It's always in motion.
It's
Wow.
vibrating.
So is that the same with you, Chaz? Do you have a breakage of some sort of base under the aquifer, or how does it work with your case?
The majority of our water wells in our area are considered shallow wells, and the bedrock is reported to be 150 feet below the surface. Now, this is according to a report from the University of Illinois. And they believe we are in fine silt or clay and not limestone from unconsolidated glacial deposits that are in our area. We do have a limestone quarry less than 12 miles away, and it's surface limestone. They didn't have to go very deep at all to get that limestone. So I kind of disagree with the university on that. And then in the area as well, not far away, is a coal mine that had operated up until about 20 years ago, but it had begun early in the 1900s. And we've never had any problem with that either. I mean, of course, they're not supposed to mine under property, so, and we don't think they are, but we've never had any problem from the coal mine. But I think we never experienced any turbidity in any of our wells connected to the house the whole time we've lived here, the 40 plus years. And we've had two of the wells hooked up to the house all the time. We could interchange if we had to, but we've never had any problems, and we've never had a water shortage.
So you've got what had been an active coal mine operation going on since early 1900s. You had also had limestone, surface level limestone quarry going on. But just like Christine, your well water was pristine and your well water was perfectly fine until the construction and obviously operation of these turbines began. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. We've in the entire 40 years we've lived here, we've never had any trouble with the coal mine. The coal mine was operative, about the first 20 years we lived here. In fact, I hauled coal out of that coal mine, but we've never had any problem with the water. And the same way with the stone quarry, it's limestone. Now it's 12 miles away, and that's not really that far, and it's surface limestone. They didn't have to go very deep to get the initial quarry started. They've gone a lot deeper now, of course, because it's been in operation for over 30 years, but we've never had any problem up until they really began installing the foundations for our turbines. Now our foundations aren't driven on piles like Christine's. Ours are I liken it to a saucer turned upside down with a shot glass placed on top for the pedestal of the turbine. And they dig a large hole, fill it with rebar and concrete, and that's what they make the base out of. But their test boring, when they initially did that, did go pretty deep. I'm not sure how far. I want to say 150 feet, but I'm not sure on that. And that's, I mean, like I say, that's, we've never had any problem until they installed the turbines. And the turbine that really affected us, that we knew when they started digging at the it's 3 miles away, straight, almost straight east of our house. That's when we noticed the worst turbidity and sediments. Now we do have a turbine as close as a mile and a half, and that's the closest one, but we've never noticed anything when they started digging that foundation. And there are 48 turbines in our wind farm, and I could see all 48 of
Oh, gee, wow. So Christine's situation was the breaking of the shale. What is the thing that is the source of the pollution for yours?
Well, we believe that there is a drainage slough. That this is our all farm ground where I live. It's all flat. It's all fertile farm ground. And there was a drainage slough that they were warned about before they started putting the turbines in, but they ignored the warnings. And they had a trouble with a couple of turbines that took tremendous amounts of gravel from the quarry 12 miles away to establish a base for those turbines. And I think they've upset the fine silver clay, like the University of Illinois says. They've done something that's unsettled the aquifers. Now, our aquifers are gravel aquifers. They're like a layer of gravel that's filled with water. And when you bore the hole, that's what we reached when we bored our hole 60 foot down, was that gravel aquifer. And that's where our water comes from.
Mm, wow. We have to go for a break now. We've been interviewing actually Christine Burke, as well as Charles Thomas, who both have serious water issues after industrial wind turbines were built in this area. And stay tuned, because I'm going to be asking them, and Todd's going to be asking them, about whether or not the government should be regulating things a lot better and if they're actually doing their job. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The buildup of spike proteins is dangerous to your health. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body, removing the spike proteins, allowing your body to repair from within. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to americaoutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to americaoutloud.shop. That's americaoutloud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
A suppression of truth and a world of darkness, void of any soul, requires that we are rightly informed, properly equipped, and strongly motivated to fight the corruption. AmericaOutloud.news is that place to awaken your heart, soul, and mind to the out loud truth. Now is our time. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
So I'm back with my new co-host, Todd Royal, an energy expert. It's kind of exciting to have a co-host after a year of doing it on my own. I miss Jay Lair, but Todd is, in fact, as we can hear, obviously going to be a fun co-host to have. He has good solid knowledge of things, especially the impacts of renewable, so-called renewable energy, on people who live nearby these facilities. We're interviewing Charles Thomas from Illinois, and we're interviewing also Christine Burke from the former township of Dover in the municipality of Chatham-Kent in Ontario. So, you know, to both guests, I'm wondering, and in fact, I guess I'll start with Christine, you know, are industry and governments actually doing anything meaningful about solving this issue, or are they sort of hoping you'll just go away?
I'd probably think the latter of going away.
Oh, yeah.
In May of 2018, Premier Doug Ford promised us a health hazard investigation. It was reduced to an all hazard investigation. And it, with COVID coming and everything, it was years before it finally got started, and it got started under a little pressure. It was, we're concerned. It's our water. You can't live life without water, food, and shelter. So it we approached our municipality, and there was a motion that was presented to the municipality and council twice. And it was voted on unanimously to write the Ministry of Health to have them complete the all-hazard investigation. Because when they did, all they did was look at the water. They took everything out of the water, looked at the water, but they didn't look at the sediments that we were concerned about, because you can't filter the sediments out.
Yeah.
Since they did not look at the sediments, I took it upon myself to open up a fundraising campaign, and I collected enough money to have 9 wells tested, the sediment tested from the water, and I had them sent to Michigan to be analyzed. And when they come back, we have now found that we have antimony, arsenic, barium, cadmium, iron, copper, lead, molybdenum, if I'm pronouncing that right, nickel, silver, and tin, all our sediments, all toxic heavy metals.
Yeah.
Our chief medical officer continued to look at it as sand. Go ahead and eat it. It's safe. You'll get rid of it on the other side of you. But that's not what we found out.
No.
Yeah.
So we are right now waiting for a response from the Ministry of Health. They need to, I feel they need to continue and complete the expert panel's recommendations to continue with the analysis of the sediments. To date, we have not heard anything.
So how long has that been going on?
May of 2023.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, is there any alternative besides taking the turbines down? Like, is there anything they could do besides just taking them off?
I think in a perfect world, if they were to shut them off, and I know it would take time for that sediment to settle, maybe there's a chance that some of us could get our water back again.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that we'd see that in our lifetime. And then you look at the others where they're completely choked off, that how do you can't get water if your intake's plugged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Christine, do you know, because what you're describing, a lot of those things are what's called rare earth metals and minerals. They're difficult to mine. They're a very difficult material to deal with. Were they able to tell you, is it almost like these things are shedding off the turbines? In other words, these systems are built to where the iron, the copper, the neodymium, the arsenics that you're describing, cadmium in particular, they're meant to stay in this turbine system. Has anyone talked to you, and I'd even say the same thing to you, Charles, if you're finding this problem, why is that getting in your water? That's supposed to stay in these turbine systems. That's what actually makes them run. Do you have any idea why this is taking place?
No, this has got nothing to do with the turbine itself. These heavy metals are in the sediment of our water. This is not anything to do with the turbine itself. This is in our aquifer. This is our groundwater.
Okay.
The sediments that are mobile in our aquifer.
Got it.
This is what the government is supposed to be doing, is finding out what these sediments consist of, because we need to know what these sediments are doing to us. It's in our clothes. We're bathing in it.
Yeah.
So these heavy metals from this black shale sediment, Kettle Point black shale sediment, this is what it's derived of. It's all these heavy metals are in that sediment that's flowing, that's keeping.
And I take it before the turbines, even though it was in the sediment, it was not actually coming out of the shale into the water then. So it's the vibration of the turbines while they're operating, the pounding while they're actually constructing it, that's liberated these pollutants into your water, which wasn't happening previously, right?
Right. It was undisturbed. There were for 12,000 years. It's a 12,000-year-old aquifer, so it was undisturbed.
Got it.
So now that it's all been shaken up, it's all mobile.
Yeah, it's just all there. Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm.
What about you, Chaz? I mean, what do you think is the actual mechanism that's polluting your water?
Well, over the time period, we've had our water tested numerous times by the county health department. Their test kits, they provide the test kits for free. We take the samples and send them to the state. And the trouble with our county health department, they're only concerned with the coliform bacteria or E. coli. And most of our older wells in this farm country have nitrates in them, which is not healthy for young children, but that's not a result of the turbines. I think the turbines do keep the sediment disturbed. So anyone that has a well in the vicinity is going to get turbidity or sediments in their well. The University of Illinois, the Illinois State Water Survey Department, should be monitoring this. That is their job. But they never came out and even offered to test our well water, much like Christine. Now, Christine's problem began much before ours. And when we started having the problem and I did a search, it took me to their area and Ruby Meeker. I think maybe you both know.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I got a lot of my information and started doing my search. And we sent our water out to an outside source and had them test it. And they've got a list of stuff that's in the water. I can't tell you all. I don't understand it all, but I've still got the list. And if we had done that prior to the installation of the turbines, it would have been much better. So anyone that's facing this situation should have their water tested thoroughly ahead of time, so they will have a basis to go forward on. Because I think if the government is going to install these wind farms, they should be aware of the problems it's creating for the people that want to live in the country and live independently on their own water. We had that, the county water line went past our house and it's been installed over 10 years ago, but we never had to use it because we had three wells on the property. But since they've installed this wind farm, we've been required to, you know, hook up to the county water to have clean water. We've got grandkids, great grandkids, and we want them to be safe. So I'm almost afraid to even let them swim and play in that water from our wells because of, you know, the dangers. I don't know that all the chemicals that's in the water now, but I think the turbines keep it stirred up.
Chaz, any idea why the University of Illinois continues to not come out and do any kind of testing at you and other your neighbors and surrounding areas request?
Well, I gave up asking them to come out. They did let me sign up to their webinars on well water, much of what I've already known, because in that small community we lived at before we moved out here, our neighbor and myself both had wells drilled, and we did our homework ahead of time, so we know what we to expect. We drilled his well first. We both pumped off it. Then we drilled my well, and we both hooked into both wells. So if one well went bad, we could share. So I knew a little bit about this, the wells and the water in the area. So, but no, the university, they've just ignored us and haven't really. All they've done is make excuses for the reason of turbidity. They haven't actually come out to do any checking. And I'm at a loss as to why.
You think it might be partly because it would maybe involve shutting down the turbines, which, of course, they wouldn't want to see that happen. Is that maybe they're just defending the turbines?
Well, I think you're right. Because the state, when they went in and passed the law, House Bill 2988 in this early spring of 2019, that took the control away from those townships for their zoning, gave it back to the county, and the county was already in over their head with the wind company. The wind company claimed to have $50 million invested in the wind farm, and if the county were to try to stop them, they were going to sue the county. So the county, they ignored the residents and went ahead and okayed the application.
Mm-hmm. For both of you, which company, for each has, who's the company that said that? And the same thing with you, Christine. I was wondering as well, which company came in and did the development of these wind farms for both of you?
For me directly?
Yeah, which company was doing it in your area?
It started off as GDF Suez, and then now it's NG Canada.
NG Canada. And what about for you, Chess?
The wind company is EDPR. They're out of Spain. They call it the Broadlands Wind Farm LLC. Mm-hmm. I don't want to try to pronounce their Spanish name. We'll just call it EDPR, EDP Renewables.
EDP Renewables. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they have also got some wind farms in Canada
mm-hmm.
and New York.
You know, one thing that strikes me is if you look at the original idea that is driving these wind farms, the idea that we have a climate emergency, I mean, it causes so many issues, so many problems, the belief that we're causing dangerous climate change. I mean, do you feel that people who are fighting against wind turbines should focus a little bit on the fact that they're not necessary in the first place? I'll ask that to Christine.
Intermittent is the magical word. It's intermittent energy, and it's so costly. Like, how can you possibly? It just doesn't make sense. It's cost a lot of so much harm. And mm-hmm. how can you call it green when it's taking our water away? It's killing birds and bats and affecting the aquatic life. And I thought it would be a good thing. I honestly did. When they come out here, I was all for it. It's under the definition of green. But come to find out, the harm that they're causing is, I don't even know what to say about it anymore. It's not green, it's dark. It's just mm-hmm. dark.
And I guess you would agree with that, Chaz.
I would agree that they're not nearly as good as people think they are. This 48 wind turbines we have in our facility are supposed to power 68,000 homes. And 68,000 homes is really nothing. There are over 4 million homes in the state of Illinois. And I mean, compared to the industries that require electricity, 68,000 homes is a drop in the bucket. So mm-hmm. 48 wind turbines, we'd have to cover the state with wind turbines to even come close.
And it's intermittent on top of it, like Christine was saying. I had a question for Todd, if that's okay. When we're talking about supposed green energy, you've written books on this. I mean, can you tell our listening audience, is Michael Moore right in his film Planet of the Humans when he shows supposedly that these sources are not green? They may be the dirtiest energy sources on the planet when you look how they're made and everything else. I mean, is he exaggerating or... is it a bit of a hoax to call them green?
It's a hoax. And I think when I see someone like listening to you, Christine, and I hear it in your voice, it kind of gives me this incredible anger. I want justice for you. You know, with Chaz, with you, I want justice for both of you. I mean, you don't even have an opportunity to put it, you know, to get a water line with you, Christine. And what people don't realize about these things is that, and these two have described it, all the concrete, the rebar, the boring, all the rare earth metals and minerals it takes, the iron, the copper, the steel, the concrete, the cadmium, the lithium, this all has to be done by fossil fuels. People don't realize it's sometimes upwards of 66,000 pounds of just concrete alone for each one of these turbines. One of our guests here has already told us, I think it was you, Chaz, that had to go to the limestone quarry pit and just get mounds after mounds of gravel. Well, how was that gravel made? That was pulverized by transportation that uses fossil fuels. And so there's nothing green about these. Christine, I really hear you because you go, gosh, this was going to be good. I was for this. It was green. I think anybody would think that. Gosh, let's get everything from the wind. The hopeful news I can give you, Christine, because I've done work for the nuclear power sector and still doing some work, is that Canada wants to begin building nuclear power again. And it's the safest, best way to get electricity. And people can argue with me about that. But it's not going to be that you or Chaz are going to have a nuclear power plant right next to you and they're going to be pulverizing everything under the sun. Yes, it'll have to be built. But then when it's running, you wouldn't be having these issues. And you're not going to have these issues even during the, while that plant would be taking place. So no, Tom, there's nothing green about these. When you take it from the moment you're going to start, you're thinking about building these things, like these two have suffered through, to the moment someone's going to have to go in there now. And I think it's Christine who said 96 turbines. Chaz, you're at 48. Well, someone's going to have to dismantle all of that. And probably, yeah, people don't realize it's very rare and it's incredibly difficult and expensive to recycle any of those parts because they require special plastics and resins and materials. And so my heart really does ache right now. And it's horribly disturbing knowing that the things that, you know, you write about things and I'm behind a desk and a computer, these two are living it and they're living it daily. And like Christine said, your basic needs, food, shelter, water, and then we hope we have love in our life, our mates, our partners, our spouses, children. And these guys are having the most basic thing taken away from them off something it didn't need to take place.
Yeah. And I get the impression, and tell me if I'm right, Chaz and Christine, that property values probably drop. They probably fall out of what's happened to your property values, Christine, after these turbines went up?
It had dropped tremendously. We had to contact MPAC, and we submitted our report on the effects of what happened here with our water, and our property value did drop.
Wow. And what about you, Chaz? Same thing? Or
I'm sure my property value has dropped. I haven't had it evaluated recently, but my neighbors to the east, closer to the turbines, their property values have gone down significantly. Because of the shadow flicker and the noise and just the ugly sight you're going to see out of your backyard, you know. So, no, they've affected property values considerably. The closer you are, the more affected it's going to be.
Yeah. I had a question for both of you concerning what people should do when a wind farm is proposed for their jurisdiction. I mean, Christine, to start with you, if you could go back in time and you knew what was going to happen, what would you have done?
Fight. Because I don't know if you're aware, it wasn't just the 94 here. They were looking to put another facility outside the town of Wallsburg called Otter Creek. They were supposed to be the tallest turbines in North America. And because of what happened here, I think they were successful. More families would have been impacted because they were on the same aquifer. They would have lost their water. So I don't know how they were successful, but they were, and they won. Mm. So there was a lot of families saved.
Wow, it can happen. And you say they're tall. I mean, what, they're 600 feet high, something like that?
The ones here, but I believe the ones out to an Ottawa way are much higher than that. Nation Rise.
Oh, yeah. And what about you, Chaz? If you had to recommend to people, what would you suggest they do? Just move away or fight? Or do you think they could win even the way Christine described happened in one municipality?
The first thing you should do is start getting in touch with your neighbors and, you know, let them know how you feel and let them know the consequences of putting turbines on their property. The turbines are going to have to come out someday. And from what I've seen of the farmers in the area, some of them do have buyer's remorse because they've got the turbines and the property that the access roads have taken. Someday all that stuff's going to go out and it's going to devalue the farm ground. Four turbine sites have already been sold in the last 2 years. People just want to get out of it. And I wanted to say that over a 12-month period, in May of 22 to May of 23, I kept an informal diary of the wind turbines And for 80 days, they did absolutely nothing. I mean, they were at a standstill for 80 days out of that year. And I kept running. Like I say, it was informal. I didn't just watch them every day. When I noticed it, I came in and I'd make a note of it, the time and the temperature and what the turbines were doing, because I can see all 48 of them from my front yard. So I wanted to let you know that. But if you could, you got to get in contact with all the neighbors in the area. Let them know how you feel and what the possible consequences are. And if possible, get a moratorium, get your township boards on board, and share information with them. And if we'd have got started earlier, I think we could have done better.
And to speak out forcefully, and I'll give you an example that might encourage people who are facing the situation that you faced when they first came in. Just south of Ottawa, there's a town near Finch that there was a proposal to put in a battery pack, battery energy storage system, a massive battery pack. And they activated themselves. The local people actually found out about it ahead of time, the potential for fires and pollution, et cetera. And at a meeting that the company put on to present the project, they had 100 angry residents there. And, you know, there were two councillors there from the local municipality, and they were shocked when they saw the reaction of the audience. And a few days later, they canceled the project. So it can happen. And both of you described how it can happen. So, I mean, I hope people share this interview across all sorts of sources, because, you know, we can win if we stand up. Do you agree with that? Are you, or am I being optimistic, Chaz?
No, I agree. If you get to talking with your neighbors and get them together and show up in force, I think you can sway these county boards. Yeah.
So, Christine, you obviously agree so as well, because a municipality near you prevented it. So what's your future plans, Christine? Are you going to stay where you are and just have to have a lot of water taken in by jugs instead? Like, what's your plan?
Right now we're going to continue carrying jugs, and because this is our family home, this has gone through generations. My husband was born and raised here, so was his father, and grandpa was here too. So how do you walk away from that? And maybe a Sandpoint well? I don't know. I don't know what to do. All I want to know right now at this point is that our Ministry of Health is going to care for not just us, me, and for everybody around here. The water might look crystal clear, but that box shale is so, so fine that you will not see it through the tap. We need a bioaccessibility analysis done. We're concerned, and we are still waiting, for the Ministry of Health to complete the all-hazard investigation. Doug Ford promised it. It needs to be completed.
Exactly.
We need to know what this is doing to us.
Yeah, right. And Chaz, what are your plans? Are you going to stay where you are, or are you going to move away?
No, we'll stay here. We've been here 40 plus years. We're both from the area. My wife and I both grew up and went to school here, and we've raised our kids. Now, I think our kids are not interested in staying in the area, and I don't blame them. And, of course, we've got great-grandkids in the area, too. So we're going to stay, and we have access to clean water through the county. I mean, it costs us about $100 a month, but we do have that, and so we're going to stay.
Yeah. You know, in 2 weeks, we're going to have somebody on by the name of Dr. Ben, and he is a PhD, an expert in this area. Christine, could you tell us a bit about Dr. Ben? Did he actually study your particular circumstance?
He was a member on the government's expert panel. He's also a local resident, and within that expert panel, they had to have a local resident. He's a geoscientist. He cares. And he helped me with the GoFundMe campaign, the campaign for raising money to have the sediments tested. that the government just would not do, has not done. They did not collect one sample of sediment. So he helped me. I am really appreciative of Dr. Keith Benn.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's going to be a very interesting interview with him to find out some of the science behind what he's discovering. So, Todd, that was a great interview. I mean, very sad stories from both sides. But, you know, Todd, I mean, what's your conclusion? Should they be building these turbines in the first place?
Never. They shouldn't. Not until the technology is better. I also want to add, you know, Christine and Chaz, there's a gentleman named Robert Bryce, well-known writer. He's written something on the OSAGE tribe, Osage tribe in Oklahoma, and they have been able to defeat a wind turbine installation that's actually been ordered to be taken down. So I love to share that information with you. You can also go on Google, and maybe there's some ray of hope for both of you, but maybe even more, even you as well, Christine, that contact these folks, see how they did it, because they have been victorious against one of the largest, you know, developers of wind farms in the world. And so, yeah, they shouldn't, Tom. These shouldn't be built. There's no way these people should be having their water and their lives completely upended for something that's, like you said, Christine, is supposedly green. That's wrong. And I think both of you deserve justice and, frankly, just your way of life to be returned back to you.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Well, we have to sign out now, unfortunately. So I hope people can share this interview, because it's really important people know what's coming down the pipe when wind turbines are proposed. So this is Todd Royal and Tom Harris, myself. We're signing out from the other side of the story. That was an exciting and interesting interview. Thanks, Christine and Chaz.
Thank you.